Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. And my guest is the rector of the Chapel of the Cross, Elizabeth Marie Melchiona. And she's hit the ground running. She's no longer a new rector.
I just celebrated my third anniversary at the parish this past Sunday.
In any event, her arrival was noteworthy in the sense that it hadn't been forever that the Episcopal Church has permitted women to be priest. We've gotten used to having women in the pulpit as assistants or associates, but we hadn't had a woman in charge. What's it like?
Well, it's been a great adventure. The parish, the Episcopal Church began ordaining women in 1976.
So it's not really recent, like I think of it. In my mind, it's still new, but mm-hmm. Most of the people who go to church now have experienced that.
Yes, and it just happened in terms of who had been called and who had served. They had not yet called a woman, so I had the great privilege of being the first woman that they had called in 176 years. But I hope that I can serve as someone who continues in that legacy of being faithful, being a good steward, serving in the community. I have much to look up to in my predecessors.
What do you feel like is your responsibility in terms of being the rector of building your congregation and serving the congregation mm-hmm. versus the responsibility that a religious leader has to the community in which he or she is serving? How, mm-hmm. how do you balance those?
I think you can't do everything, right? You can't be everywhere and at every community event or at every parish event. But I think that you are both enlivening and supporting leaders in the parish who are going out to do that work for the sake of the church. And then there are times where you lend your voice or your presence. You show up in such a way to in which it matters, or you feel moved, or where your presence can help affect change in a particular way. So an example for me would be showing up and doing an interfaith course at Duke. I know you can't
talk about
Duke with UNC.
No. We're
the Office of OLLI, the Lifelong uh-huh. Learning Institute.
So they've asked you to come.
Recently did a course with an imam and a Jewish rabbi, and had folks from the community who signed up. And we talked about interfaith engagement and dialogue, and is it worth it? And how do we seek to make change and cultivate respect and support amongst one another and different faith traditions? So, I mean, that's a way in which I see showing up out in the community that matters to me in my own life of interfaith mm-hmm. engagement.
Well, the other special responsibility
yes.
that the rector of the Chapel of the Cross has is because of your location, you are essentially a part of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill campus.
We are surrounded on three sides.
Do you feel that way, or do you feel surrounded?
I mean that in a good way. I mean that in the sense that the parish was actually our founding priest had served as the university chaplain and felt that students' religious lives could be more effectively served by having denominational worship rather than corporate worship at the university. And so that's part of the reason.
So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so William Mercer Green was a professor of belles lettres at the university.
Of what? Belles lettres?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a liberal arts course.
Yes, I would think so. And he had served in a variety of places in North Carolina, but while he was a professor, moved to allow for all different student religious life to be tended to denominationally, if you will, rather than corporately. So that's part of the reason that the parish was founded.
So this would have been 100 and something years ago.
1842, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I think deep in the parish's DNA is asking questions around how do we partner with and serve this great institution in the ways that you can as a religious mm-hmm. institution with a public university.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I want to talk a little bit more, but the binding. Mm-hmm. I think the chairman of your search committee was the former chancellor, James Meeser. So he must have had a notion of what place the church had as a part of the campus.
I think as a place of hospitality and welcome, we have students who live in an apartment in the parish.
Oh, you do?
We do. And that is their home. We have a campus center that's open 24 hours. But then those other ways in which, how could we be a helpful thought partner in relationship to medical ethics or business ethics, or do we have space that could be used to host an innovation hub? All of those kinds of questions are live questions that we're asking.
Well, it's not without controversy either when you start providing assets to a secular institution.
Sure. But we are glad to host. We have the Arboretum offices at our church. We're glad to do that for the Arboretum.
Well, I don't want to get us too far off topic, mm-hmm. but I'm interested in the Arboretum as an underappreciated asset to our community.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you see that? It's your backyard, but it's a fantastic.
It is. I'm out there nearly every day at some point in the day to walk, to think, to return a sort of a deep phone call that might warrant being outside while you. There's something about that space.
So do you go sit on a bench and work?
I walk.
You walk and talk.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
There are other controversies, I guess, mm-hmm. in the Episcopal Church, as in other religious denominations. And which ones have an impact on your work, including those things like the ordination of gay pastors,
mm-hmm.
the performing of marriages between two
mm-hmm.
gay partners?
Mm-hmm.
How do those situations, I guess, impact your work?
So one of the things that I appreciate about the Episcopal Church is that there is a great there are some things that we hold to be true that we state in the creeds that we pray on Sunday.
And you believe all those things. You have to believe all those things.
And I do believe those things. I don't know that I necessarily understand those things, right? You believe them and you seek to encounter them up to such a point where you encounter mystery, and you have to have a level of trust in how do mysterious unions among different facets of God actually happen. But there's a great breadth of theological positions and postures. Our parish happens to be a place that was the first parish in the Diocese of North Carolina to do the work around same-sex blessings, to have those conversations and to determine, yes, this is something with which we will move forward. So by the time that from a federal perspective, same-sex marriage had come along, we had had those conversations and done that work.
In your parish,
mm-hmm.
which would be a more progressive, there would be conservative people
who would
be in the congregation.
There are, and that's one of the beauties of the parish.
Largely, you would be more open to these than many of the parishes in other, maybe smaller non-university towns.
I don't want to speculate. I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know. And I think what you have to do is get to know the parish. I see it as a huge gift of the ability to minister with and receive students, young adults, folks who've moved to town at all, folks who've retired and come to the community, folks at all ages and stages of life, and say, you are welcome here to be a fellow disciple and to be challenged on all these whole breadth of issues. And yes, here we do have female clerics. Yes, we do have same-gender wedding liturgies. And not every single person who's in the pews would choose that for themselves, and that we can hold that together.
Yeah. Oh, my golly. Well, that to me, that would be the extraordinary challenge that any rector or priest or preacher or leader in any church group where you would expect there to be different positions about this, is to persuade them to, sure, we'll have these different views and we might shout and scream at each other about them, but we're not going to let it break up.
But we don't walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, now some Episcopalians have walked away, mm-hmm. some congregations.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a is that something that we've seen, that was a passing thing, or are we in the middle of other congregations feeling like the denomination has become too liberal and are thinking of breaking away still?
That's a good question. I don't know about active, ongoing, you know, of parishes who are searching. My sense is that those who have discerned that they have chosen to step away and be under the oversight of the Bishop of Rwanda, the Bishop of Nigeria, my sense is that has happened,
mm-hmm.
and that those congregations have
they made their way and they're
and made
they're,
their way
and we're not fighting that battle anymore.
No, and I'll be glad to be in conversation, you know, with someone who's there.
With them as a, not a separate denomination exactly, but as a different branch of the same.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm having such a good time, I hate to take a break. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with the longtime rector at the Chapel of the Cross, Elizabeth Marie Melchiona. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with the rector of the Chapel of the Cross here in Chapel Hill, Elizabeth Marie Melchiona, and she's guiding me. I think you can count this as a pastoral call. You're just
a delightful one.
We talked a little bit about the responsibility of a church like the Chapel of the Cross, located in Chapel Hill, to be a part with to be in an appropriate relationship with
mm-hmm.
the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me just tell you. You know, I'm
yes.
a Presbyterian,
yes.
and recently the a new experiment in pastoring with the co-pastors.
Yes.
And these now I want to say kids, these young people who are who've accepted the assignment as a married couple to be the co-pastors, were students at Carolina and met in the Presbyterian campus ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this. So what are you all doing?
mm-hmm. We have a new university minister who just started her work with us. She comes from NYU and Manhattan to Chapel Hill. Her husband is a grad. We'll be out there at week of welcome as students come back to campus. But I think a comprehensive university ministry, for me, asks questions not just around undergraduates and graduate students, but faculty, administrative mm-hmm. staff, support staff. How do you offer and in what ways appropriate and helpful support? There are things like at the Feast of St. Luke, the Blessed Physician, you know, anointing of the hands for those who are medical professionals or in medical service. There are things like that that I wonder how we might serve in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've just been reading the book about the presidencies of Edward Kidder Graham
mm-hmm.
and of Harry Chase.
Mm-hmm.
This would be from about the time right before the First World War
mm-hmm.
until the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, I guess, almost startled at how deeply religious institutionally the secular university was.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I'm just starting out. There was a daily chapel service.
Mm.
And,
I didn't realize it had gone that
into
long.
That into that far. Mm-hmm. And apparently Edward Kidder Graham was such a great speaker that it was mandatory, at least for freshmen and sophomores. And but nobody resisted. He was such a persuasive,
interesting,
and sympathetic friend of the students that the juniors and the seniors, you know, bolted in to hear him. But, I mean, all of that is interesting, and you kind of wonder, gosh, what an incredible person he must have been. Mm-hmm. But less 100 years ago, mm-hmm. although it was theoretically secular, there was a whole assumption that everybody was a Christian, and if they weren't, they were going to keep their mouths shut and not argue about it.
Yeah. And,
now it's
and
different.
In some ways, we still make those assumptions.
Do we really? You
know, well, I think things like I'll look at the public school calendar, right? And sometimes those, there'll be something on a Jewish High Holy Day, right? So the sometimes I think there's a normative assumption around the Christian calendar.
Yeah, we still do that.
We don't have
mandatory chapel anymore.
We do not.
But the predisposition of faculty members and students mm-hmm. was that this is a North Carolina institution, and in North Carolina in those days, if you weren't a Christian, mm-hmm. you didn't brag about it. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of mm-hmm. quietly. And those professors, even if they were challenging the doctrines of the church, for instance, Collier Cobb was preaching or teaching mm-hmm. Evolution at a time when most of the people in North Carolina didn't believe and believe that that was heresy.
Good for him.
but that nevertheless, he wasn't preaching against Christianity. He was preaching what he thought mm-hmm. science taught him, mm-hmm. and we would agree with that. But in those days, it was as if, as some people in North Carolina thought, he's not only teaching something that didn't consistent with what I believe, but that is heresy. So the university is teaching heresy. Now, you would find that there would be no one or almost no one who would challenge the teaching of evolution, but you would find some people who thought that some of the teaching of the faculty was not consistent with the Christian faith.
As it should be at a place of intellectual rigor where you're engaging the life of the mind and you're seeking to welcome all kind.
Well, how do you feel? I mean, what is the responsibility of the church to administer to many faculty members who have no church affiliation and really have no desire to engage with the Christian church or, mm-hmm. or any other religious?
Mm-hmm. I would say, do you want to be in conversation? How can we be of support? Those the life milestones through which we pass, particularly those of birth and welcoming a child, of death, of grief, those are all real struggles that are going to be faced mm. in a campus community, in a parish community. So if there are resources that we can bring to bear that are helpful, we're glad to be a resource.
Well, what do you say to a theoretical faculty member mm-hmm. who says, oh, Elizabeth Marie, I love you. You're great. But I just can't believe any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But is there any way I can be a part of this fellowship? I really want my children to have the benefit of having a connection, religious mm-hmm. connectivity. Mm-hmm. But I can't get up there and say those creeds with you, honestly.
I would say let's be in conversation, right?
Well, can
the door is always open.
And can my kids come to the kindergarten and come to the Sunday school? And then,
yes, come and learn. Come and learn and come and see. Having served as a college chaplain, it was really interesting encountering those young adults who were nuns, who had no religious background mm-hmm, or affiliation, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and those who had some foundation or formation in some strand of tradition. And I found that those who had some platform, pre-existing scaffolding, had an easier time than negotiating those big life questions. They had a place from which they were coming mm. and from which they could compare the thought of different religious traditions and how that applied to their life, their decision-making patterns, how they wanted to live and affect change in the world. And it was more challenging for those students who had no where for whom it was all new. The idea that mm. there might.
Well, do you excuse me?
For yeah, no,
but,
no.
But do you feel a special responsibility for ministering to the what you call the nuns, those who Or do you just wait for them to come and ask you a question?
Oh, you can't wait. The days of attractive ministry where people are just going to come to our community because they see it and they'll come in. I think that those days ended, you know, decades ago.
What do you mean that you can't wait for people just to say?
So you can't. I don't think you can assume that those who might need the counsel of a cleric are necessarily going to cross your threshold. I have encounters in the grocery store that I'll have if I have my collar on, where someone will stop and say, you know, are you a priest? Sometimes they'll say, are you a Roman Catholic priest? And I'll say, no.
You know, almost.
They don't yet ordain women, but I think you don't know when you might want to be available for that encounter for someone.
Well, If you join us late, I'm visiting with the rector of the Chapel of the Cross, Elizabeth Marie Melchiona. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Elizabeth Marie Melchiona. She is the rector of the Chapel for the Cross and celebrating her third
anniversary.
Been here more than 3 years now. Yeah. I want to talk wonderful conversation about your feeling of responsibility for the wider community, mm-hmm. including the university campus. I want to talk a little bit about your religious journey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you wear this collar and people say, well, she's Catholic, but she can't, if she's Catholic, she can't, women can't do that. Mm-hmm. But you talk about your growing up. I'm interested in two of your
yes.
traditions. First, growing up in a Catholic family,
yep.
With Catholic adults mm-hmm. guiding you. And mm-hmm. And secondly, your work at Davidson College, mm-hmm. which has a Presbyterian tradition, but you were an Episcopal minister in the midst of all these Presbyterians.
So I was raised in southwestern Virginia, and one set of grandparents was Episcopalian, and my other grandparents, my grandfather was Italian American, and so we were Roman Catholic, and we went faithfully to Mass, and I have always been curious about God. I can remember being on a swing set as a child and thinking I had figured out the Holy Spirit, which, that might be the only time.
We're
going
to stop there and you're going to explain it to me.
I think it had been the Feast of Pentecost, and I had heard that the Spirit was like wind, and I remember swinging on the swing set and seeing the leaves rustling and thinking like, oh, okay. Okay, that's it. I figure out, you know.
There it is.
So.
You were 5, 4, 3, 10?
A little kid swinging. My sister was there, and she's 3 years younger, so I must have been 6 or 7.
Wow.
Little kid. But grew up in southwestern Virginia, went to Davidson College.
But now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Growing up
mm-hmm.
in a Catholic
sure.
environment, and I think you deeply. Am I right that you deeply loved your grandfather? That you?
Oh yes, all my grandparents.
and so were informed by him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, when did you? Well, what was it like growing up in the Catholic Church in Southwest Virginia? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a stronghold of, isn't it? Of
It was not the predominant religious.
I mean,
for a long time.
When I was growing up, and I grew up in part in northeast mm-hmm. Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
and surrounded by people, some people who thought Catholics were pagans almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, and this was a deep-seated mm-hmm. tradition. So you must have run into that.
You definitely run into that, and I think that. My own parish was comprised of folks who had grown up in southwestern Virginia or moved there, and also a good number of folks who had immigrated from Vietnam. So we had a lot of Vietnamese Catholics in the parish.
So that was it was not a Latino-driven, it was— Mm-mm. of Yankees who moved down there? I mean, where did they come from?
Folks from all over, folks who had joined the and in some ways, thinking back on that, I don't know that I processed the world that way as a child, right? I wasn't thinking through from where did they come. It was just this was my parish family. But of course, I encountered that as a young person. You know, I would have folks who would say I wasn't. You know, Roman Catholics weren't really Christians.
Weren't real Christians. Like we do, some people like do Latter-day Saints now and say they're not real Christians. And if you had a conversation with a member, they would say, of course we're Christians.
Yeah. And my great-grandparents came from down to Roanoke to help raise my dad. His mother died when he was an infant. And so English was not their first language.
Oh, come on.
And so I was raised with a great sense of you respect all people, regardless of the place from which they came. And so that was also part of it meant to go to church.
Was it reciprocal in the sense that, as I don't want to say as a marginalized person, but that even though some of the people in Southwest Virginia might not accept you as a Christian because you are a Catholic, but you could still reach out warmly to those people, even though they may not.
Oh, sure.
What do you mean?
I don't think about that the same way as an adolescent, right? It was my identity in such a way that I hadn't made a choice about it at that time. So it was sort of like, this is who I am. This is how we are in the world.
Well, how did you make that a choice to leave the environment in which you'd comfortably grown up?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't. I mean, it's clearly wasn't something that you thought was missing. It was something that you found.
I had gone. You know, grown up in the same parish, my other grandparents were Episcopalians and were...
So you'd been in the church.
So I had been in that church. I can remember, I studied abroad when I was an undergrad. I was in Madagascar. And I can remember going to services there. And it was, are you, you know, Catholic or are you Protestant? And if you were Protestant, the church that you could go to in town was Lutheran. And I went to the Lutheran church, and I remember thinking there how important it was to me to be part of a global communion. So I knew I wanted to be part of a church that was sacramental, that was part of a global communion. I can remember being about 9 years old, and my dad leaned over to me and he said, "Girls, you can be a good Catholic and use birth control." I guess
this is your Catholic father.
Yes, yeah. And so,
this is such a great story.
The only thing I can figure is that the priest must have been saying something about it. I mean, I'm not sure I was exactly tuned in to the homily, and I remember thinking, Okay. And so I knew it was important to me to be, you know, part of a creedal church, part of a sacramental church, part of a church that was a global
Well, now
communion.
The Catholic Church had all of that.
Yes. And there were ways in which scripture needed to be interpreted, teachings about human sexuality that I wasn't.
You weren't comfortable with
it. I was not comfortable with.
Well, this is so fascinating that as a young, not as a younger adult, that the Catholic Church's teachings and the regime with respect to birth control, which many of us have always felt was a little beyond reason, but that was one of the driving forces. You couldn't accept, you know, I'm not comfortable. I'm comfortable with a lot of stuff, but I'm not comfortable with that.
And then I was invited to Davidson College, where I attended, got a grant from the Lilly Foundation, to encourage the theological exploration of vocation. So they used the funds to encourage students who were not considering ordained ministry. You know, I think maybe tax attorney was in my future to try it.
At what stage were you as an undergraduate?
I was a senior. It was going into our senior
year. So this is going to be graduate work.
And so they said, we'll meet your senior year. We'll do discernment. We'll talk with people who've done their master's divinity, who do all kinds of different work in the world, work in the church.
Now, had you left the Catholic Church at this point, or were you on the verge of leaving?
No, I had become an Episcopalian by this point.
And in what stage of your college career? During
college. I don't remember.
You don't even remember exactly.
Juncture.
But you moved and you stopped going to Mooresville for the Catholic Church or wherever it was and started going to the Episcopal Church in Davidson?
I was engaged in the campus ministry on campus. So you met every week your senior year, and it was a challenge grant to try 1 year of theological education within 3 years of graduating. The only religion class I had taken was classical Buddhism before I went to graduate school.
But you had a great grounding. I mean, you were a church.
Yes.
You had
mm-hmm.
all of the
mm-hmm.
training.
Mm-hmm. And so that was really what set me on that path of contemplating and genuine discernment of, could this be a way in which I could answer a call and to serve?
Well, I'm so interested. I forgot it's time for a break. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Elizabeth Marie Melchiona, the rector of the Chapel of the Cross. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with the rector of the Chapel of the Cross, Elizabeth Marie Melchiona, and we're talking about her journey, her religious journey. Elizabeth Marie, just to review, you grew up Catholic, mm-hmm. but with an Episcopal connection
yes.
through one of your parents and
yes.
set of grandparents, and then came to Davidson College, mm-hmm. where you really got educated.
Yes.
And experienced a challenge to accept a introductory experience for you weren't planning to go to seminary.
Correct.
But you agreed to go and experiment.
Go try it. You might a challenge grant.
And you tried it and liked it.
Yes.
Where'd you go?
I went to the Yale Divinity School. And Berkeley Divinity School at Yale is one of the Episcopal seminaries that merged with Yale in the 70s.
So you had both?
Concurrently.
Mm-hmm. So you could have I don't want to call it a secular religious education, but you'd have a broad one, but the Episcopalians
had were dual appointed.
Well.
And then I also got to study in the Yale Institute of Sacred Music. And so I got to study in an intimate way with choral conductors and organists, and it was a really rich time.
So then what after Yale, mm-hmm. while you were there, you decided?
I was in the ordination process before I went to seminary.
Even though it was a one-year experimental grant?
Yes, I was in the discernment process. One of the wonderful things is that discernment is a process.
So you sign up with the Episcopalian Church in some fashion,
mm-hmm.
either through the bishop
through
of your home
parish.
Your
mm-hmm.
local parish in Southwest Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even though you hadn't really arranged for the financing of a whole university.
The grant covered my first year, and I was very fortunate to receive a different grant that covered the rest of my formation. Yeah.
So then what?
Then
did you go to Tallinn or something?
I did. After that, I received a fellowship from the Luce Foundation, like Time and Life magazine, Luce. Mm-hmm. And the idea of it is that you serve in your professional area and you are a reverse cultural ambassador for Southeast Asia.
What does that mean?
It means that
you're going to learn or you're going to...
You are going to learn and be formed, and that as you return back to your context in your field, you will share what you have learned, and to help broaden and cross-pollinate and help folks learn and be exposed to Southeast Asian culture practices who might not be otherwise. So I taught at a seminary in Thailand at Payap University and worked at an interfaith dialogue institute there. And so that was a tremendous time.
Were you working as an ordained person at this point?
I was ordained, and women are not ordained in the province of Southeast Asia.
Wow. Oh, wow.
In the Anglican Communion.
So how did that work?
So I was not serving in a Eucharistic setting.
They would let you come as an ordained person.
Correct.
You just couldn't
act as an
ordained.
So I could go and teach. I just couldn't.
Serve
officiate
communion
at the,
and,
correct. Correct.
Well, what did you learn there that you're applying here at the Chapel of the Cross?
Oh, my goodness. Learning how to ask questions, how to be genuinely curious about folks and their stories, the places from which they have come. I had students from Burma, Thailand, Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, one guy from Virginia. So folks from all over.
How long?
I was there for the year.
For the year. And then you came back. What'd you do?
I have come back. I've served congregations in Northern Virginia, in Arlington, Virginia, in Davidson, North Carolina, in Denver, Colorado, out at the cathedral out there, which is where I came most recently when we moved here when I was 34 weeks pregnant.
Yeah, tell us about I can't say you're newly married anymore, but you... You brought some people with you when you came. How did you get up with them?
Yes. So I this is a funny story. My husband was my parishioner's son in Davidson, and they kept saying, "You should meet our son. You should meet our son."
No.
Yes. And you know, parishioners often want to fix up their late 20s, early 30s. Cleric,
well, of course.
With
well, did it work?
Some beloved nephew, and it did. He had grown up in Davidson, and we had a common pool of friends. His first wife had died, and so when we got married, I became mom to a child who's now going to be a freshman at East. And when we moved,
that's East Chapel Hill High
School. East Chapel Hill High School, yes, indeed. And then when we moved, I was pregnant with a child.
This is
early.
The extraordinary thing which sets you apart as a star is that the a congregation at the Chapel of the Cross and the bishop and however that works were not only willing but anxious to have you, even though you were about to be incapacitated,
mm-hmm. and temporarily.
on maternity leave.
Yes.
And all that's worked out well.
It has.
Well, I want to talk about that and about your own family. But in the minute or two that we got left, talk about your challenges that you face at your church.
Mm.
And maybe not challenge, but opportunities that you see that you are excited about.
Gosh, I am excited about looking at how our space is used for hospitality in the community. So can we provide space where ideas might be incubated that then go out to change the world?
That's a dangerous statement because people are going to call. Well, I'm thinking how I can use your space. And I'm going to be calling you tomorrow and saying,
let's talk about it.
I've got a program I want to present, and it's you all are mighty conveniently located. So you would welcome.
Yes. That's part of as we raise our operating funds year by year. That's part of what we're clear in our identity is that we want to be a partner to the community and offer hospitality.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is exciting.
What else?
A new school year, a new group of students coming to campus. We have a number of new staff people who are just tremendous. I'm excited about our choir program that invites people of all ages and offers to children especially free musical education and leadership formation. So there's lots of exciting things happening.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
The special challenge for you is in doing all of these things that you've got us excited about is your own congregation and the formation of the appropriate programs. As an outsider, the thing that I hear about most from people who are both loyal members and then others who visit is Evensong.
Evensong.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is that?
What is it?
Yeah.
Evensong is a wonderful tradition in the Anglican Church. It is sung evening prayer. So there's a daily office. There's prayers that are to be said four times a day. And evensong is that evening service to be said, not the going to bed prayers, but the close of the day prayers that are sung. And it is an immersive and transformative experience. I would have to say it happens most frequently in the evening on a Sunday, but it's a special occasion. That's a check our website.
Check our website. It's
yes.
not every day. It's
it
not every
not.
Sunday.
It is not.
But
we
it's
have
occasionally.
A, we have a Sunday 5:15 service regularly, but the evensong happens about once a quarter.
Well,
yeah.
I'll keep an eye on your website.
Yes.
You want to give that Chapel of the Cross website? Can you go to
www.thechapelofthecross.org.
.org. Elizabeth Marie Melchiona. Now, 3 years later, welcome to Chapel Hill.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for sharing your background and your aspirations for service in Chapel Hill.
Thank you, D.G.
And thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking WCHL. I'll be back here before you know it.